It's time for Sound Mind with life coach and counselor Daniel Pryor. For more information about Daniel Pryor and his services, visit BibleBasedCounselor.com. Daniel has offices in Kirkland and Edmonds. And now your host, Daniel Pryor.
Along with co-host Mark Holland, it's another edition of the Sound Mind broadcast with life coach and counselor Daniel Pryor. Hi there, Daniel.
Hello, Mark.
Good to see you on Zoom now. We've been recording a lot of our shows now on Zoom, and we're back to Zoom this week from Arizona. That's where you are?
Yeah. Sunny Arizona.
Sunny Arizona. Right. <laughs> Sunny and still hot. You've been having lots of construction going on your home and stuff, so that sometimes interrupts our ability to record. Why does it always happen on Fridays, it seems like, when we record?
I don't know. But things are getting, you know, I've just had to have the office, the home office put together, and that's looking pretty good now. So
good.
Yeah.
Okay. Good. Well, you are doing your counseling via Zoom or different online methods now, and it seems to be working pretty well. Even though you're in Arizona, you found a lot of your clients do still connect with you over the internet.
Yeah, and I have new people that call weekly, and I was going to mention that some of the hangups that I think people might have with virtual is that I know that sometimes in the past, doctors' offices have begin to utilize virtual meetings. And that's a little bit different than counseling, actually a lot different, because if I'm talking to my doctor virtually, there's not a lot that he can do in terms of making an actual examination. And so those tend to be pretty innocuous. Those are, setting up appointments and that kind of thing. Well, that's very different from counseling virtually, because we actually can do the counseling virtually. It doesn't require so some people like that personal touch and being in the office, but I think a lot of people are finding that once you get past the initial adjustment that you can still get everything done in a counseling session.
Do you think maybe sometimes people are maybe even more candid maybe in what they discussed when they do it virtually or in person?
Well, I think they're more relaxed. Yeah, I think they're more relaxed because they're in their own setting, and so I think that I think they're more relaxed, and that can be helpful. Sure.
And building trust, and that's also the theme of our discussion this week. What it means to be building trust. Are you talking about building trust in a marriage, or just in general as a person?
Well, we could say in general, but I'm focusing on marriage. All the things that we talk about today are applicable to any relationship. Of course, marriage is pretty much a quintessential because, of course, in marriage, the husband and wife are required to be much more vulnerable and much more giving than in other relationships. In most other relationships, if you know we get peeved off at a buddy or a pastor or something, we can just go somewhere else. But in marriage, we have to, you know, we're commanded to stay in that relationship because God is trying to get some deep work done.
So what are some of the first steps then to building trust?
That's right. I wanted to point out here that trust is not a thing itself. It defines the character of a relationship. So a lot of times I think when people talk about trust and we need more trust, it's as though, you know, we could, there are some, we're looking for a thing called trust, but it's really a description of the way that we are together. And so if we think of that and we think there, it's just changing the way that we are, changing the way that we interact. That's the substance of trust. So for one thing, the relationship is the trusting relationship is one of forgiveness and communion. We talk a lot about that. I've talked about the love triad in the past, and we've talked about forgiveness and communion in the love triad. And so forgiveness is really equivalent to communion. That is, when I talk about forgiveness, I'm talking about giving. And actually, when we talk about forgetting, and we've talked about this before, if you take those two English words, forgive and forget, and you take away the prefix, you've got give and get, or give and receive. And so that's really the spirit behind forgiveness, is giving and receiving. And of course, what we're giving and receiving is we're giving ourselves. I'm giving myself to this person and receiving that person in a marriage relationship. Of course, that would be the husband giving, the wife receiving, and the husband receiving, and the wife giving. And that's equivalent to communion or communion. And so that really describes a trusting relationship where the husband and wife are very open about giving themselves to one another and receiving from one another. That's easy to say. It's sometimes hard to get there. I mean, people might argue that, well, if giving and receiving is how you identify trust, then how are you going to give and receive if you don't trust? So where's the starting point?
Yeah.
We find some taking baby steps toward that. But there are some things that we'll get to later in the show, that some very practical things that people can do. Of course, they must choose to do that. And a lot of times we spend a lot of time in marriage counseling going over and over and over again, sometimes the things that people must do. And then the problem is that it's difficult to do those things. One of the main reason that it's difficult to give and receive or to commune with one another is that it requires vulnerability. Mm-hmm. And that's that dangerous V word.
Why do you think vulnerability is so dangerous?
Well, our personalities, actually the problem with that is our personalities are defense mechanisms. You know, as mortal people, we never get away from our fear and our shame. I was talking to a person earlier about getting past fear and shame. And this person, getting past fear and shame, I don't need to go into who the particulars about the person, because that person might start listening to the radio show.
Okay.
So how do we get past the shame? And what this one of the ways that we get past fear and shame is, of course, that we must pursue relationships and challenges, because we have to build a sense of value, control, and power. And so in the secular world, you would just be counseled to just identify some purpose for yourself, some goal that you're heading toward. Of course, as you're heading toward that goal and you cross the finish line and you realize in some ways that you were the one that put the finish line there, that it was entirely subjective. Mm. And it raises the question then, is there an objective measure of my worth? And that leads us to the thought of, is there a sovereign power? And so ultimately, to get past our fear and shame and to embrace vulnerability, we really must have that objective measure of, we must embrace God. We must embrace his values. And so ultimately, that's the way that we could get around that, or to deal with that, or to put it in perspective. But personalities are defense mechanisms, and these defense mechanisms now are comprised of really self-serving beliefs, and these beliefs can be things that we're not even aware of.
Hmm. Like what?
For example, I think the other day we were down at the licensing department. And my wife is a lot more organized than I am. and so we were at the licensing department and stepped up to the counter, and my wife kind of stepped in front of me and opened the file folder that we had and started passing the papers to the secretary. And the thing was that it wouldn't have mattered, except it was my pickup truck that we were licensing.
Oh.
And so the gal asked for my driver's license, and my wife turned to me and said, do you have your driver's license? And I said, do you want to take it out of my back pocket for me? And so my wife got offended, and so she just turned and went and had a seat. And I felt, I realized what I was doing. You know, I felt a little bit belittled by the fact that she had stepped up to do that. So what is my belief? Why do I believe that my wife trying to help me is a threat to me? There is a belief there. There's a belief that if she, her assistance there had some, was demeaning in some way.
Mm.
Now, I don't realize a lot of times that those kinds of beliefs, those irrational beliefs, govern a lot of my behaviors. And so, but that's what our personality which is a defense mechanism, is deprived of or deprived or comprised of many of these unknown self-serving belief systems. And so safety and security requires these belief systems, and they're fragile. So the thing is, I think these belief systems are challenged when we choose to care for one another. That is, I've got a certain amount of bandwidth, and that is all dedicated without my realizing it. That bandwidth is pretty much dedicated to my own self-preservation, my own safety and security, and not so much the safety and physical safety and security. There was no threat in that licensing department about my physical safety, but it was about the integrity of my person. Mm. And so that's what felt threatened. Now, if I go and I question that belief, then I realize that there was no call for that behavior. And so then I apologize later and say I had no call to respond that way. And in doing that, now I'm challenging that belief system, whatever it might be, and which is what, as I say, those belief systems, whatever they might be, they're challenged when we care for others. I have to, in a sense, let down my defense mechanism. I've got to soften my defense mechanism, care less about myself, care more for that other person. Another way of saying that would be back to caring for others would be giving and receiving, giving myself to that person, receiving that person. Or another way of saying that would be communion, or the sharing of our persons. So the sharing of our persons, you know, I have to, if I'm going to share myself, say with my wife, and if I'm going to receive my wife, I have to be flexible in how I care for myself. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah, of course. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And so I'm letting another person, I'm sharing my welfare. I'm sharing my time. I'm sharing my emotional bandwidth. We're going to talk about empathy and shared reality later on. And that's basically what I'm talking about is when I'm caring about another person, when I'm letting that person's experience have an impact on me, or when I'm offering an opinion or offering something of myself, making myself a little bit vulnerable to that person, it requires that I relax those defense mechanisms, and it requires that I question those beliefs, those self-serving belief systems.
Yeah, you can see how this principle helps all relationships, but we would hope that it would be the most acute in the marriage relationship, but it isn't mm-hmm. always so, and that's obviously what contributes mm-hmm. to lots of problems. If you like how Daniel approaches this subject of building trust, you want to find out more about his services as a marriage counselor and life coach, how do people get in touch with you, Daniel?
Well, that's not changed. The phone number is 425-778-6169, 425-778-6169, and also the website BibleBasedCounselor.com, where people can hear these podcasts and contact me through that website as well.
And, of course, virtual counseling these days from his home in Arizona, but it works pretty well, and you will be blessed by his counsel. Back with more of the Sound Mind broadcast with Daniel Pryor in just a moment.
Hi, this is Daniel Pryor with an encouraging word for struggling marriages. You know, it's never too late to do the right thing if a husband and wife will fully commit to one another and apply a few biblically-based fundamentals of intimate relationship. As a marriage counselor, I teach these fundamentals and their use. To learn more about how these might help your marriage, contact me through my website at BibleBasedCounselor.com or call me at 425-778-6169.
Sound Mind with life coach and counselor Daniel Pryor. And now your host, Daniel Pryor.
Along with co-host Mark Holland, and Daniel was talking about building trust and talking about a scene he had kind of with his wife at the Department of Licensing. You know, I had a funny thing happen similar to me. I don't know why men always insist on being the leaders when it comes to driving, but my wife and I were on a trip down to see some friends in Kent from the north. We live in the Edmonds area, and I wanted to go around the lake, as you remember, Daniel. You can take either 405 or I-5.
Sure. Yeah.
And I wanted to go 405, and she said, oh, no, I think we should do I-5. And I finally just said, well, you want to drive? You know, and so I kind of shut that conversation down, and I proceeded to go around 405, and we get to Bellevue, and it says 405 is closed south, completely closed. How often is the freeway actually closed? So we had to divert and go back across I-90, and it took an extra hour and a half to get across the bridge to get back over to I-5. So I definitely had to eat some crow. So the lesson of that is listen to your wife's intuition sometimes.
It's interesting how God divided the traits when he created man and formed man and woman. And it isn't always true that women are the more, you know, creative, articulate. There are marriages, and let me say that 50% of the time it's the other way around. But one thing that never changes is the husband and wife never speak the same language. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter which one is the abstract and which one is the concrete. Mm. There's always that dynamic, plenty of opportunities to eat crow, plenty of opportunities to apologize. And which brings us to the next segment of the show here, that we talked about caring for one another and, giving and receiving and communing. And of course, care has a cost, and that cost is we have to be vulnerable. And so vulnerability is that word that freaks us out a bit. It's not like necessarily putting yourself in the place of physical harms, but certainly, as you were talking about, Mark, being humbled sometimes by circumstances. And but the truth is, though, no care, no trust. If you're not willing to be vulnerable, then you're simply not going to build trust.
Yeah,
it isn't possible. There was a saying that came to mind. I didn't have it in my notes, but I remember it now. That I can't forget who said it. Was some youth speaker, but I think he was well known. But anyway, the saying was, no one cares how much you know until they know how much you care. Mm. And that's very true in marriage, that in order to get communication going, there must be trust. And in order to have trust, there must be, trust is basically caring and sharing, giving and receiving, caring more about the other person. And so we want to talk about some of the practical ways that we actually do that. So this is how we care for others. And I share with people basically three ways. And these are interrelated ideas. One is empathy, one is shared reality, and then the other is shared boundaries. So I want to go talk a little bit about these. Now, these are not on-off, like on-off switches. It's not you empathize or you don't empathize, or you share reality or you don't, or you share boundaries or you don't. It's like more on a rheostat. We do them by degrees. And the thing is, to the greater degree, to the degree that we invest in these things, that's how we're going to build trust. If we're not so it's like if you just turn on the faucet to just drip, it's going to take you a long time to fill that gallon. But if you turn it on and you give intentionally and unreservedly, then you're going to build trust very quickly. And people can argue with me about that, but I'm just right. That's can't help it. Mm. So let's talk about empathy. And empathy is having a physiological response to someone else's experience. And if you think about it, that implies vulnerability. Mm. When my wife has a bad day or bad situation, or when she's sharing about, one of the things that she's been sharing about lately is her ailing father, who is 101 now. And she goes back to visit him, and when she comes back, and or she'll we'll talk on the phone while she's visiting, have our evening phone talks, or she'll come back and she'll want to share about his frailty. And you know, I'm not a young man, and I don't really want to care that much about my father-in-law's frailty,
right?
Because it reminds me of my own,
sure.
and I'm trying to avoid that. So I can fail to empathize with her. I can fail to let her experience have an impact on me, because I want to defend myself. I want to feel safe and secure. So I don't want that kind of information. So I can shut that out. And in a sense, I'm shutting her out. I'm not receiving her. I'm not for receiving. And so in doing that, it might feel that I'm protecting myself, but unless I empathize with her, I can't build her trust in me. She can't imagine that I care if I won't empathize. Another way of sharing that person's reality is if she has a joyful day, or if she has a particular interest. She's interested in museums and going out and looking at, art museums, or maybe she wants to go to the quilt shop. My empathizing, or my lack of empathy, my lack of letting her joy and her interests, or sometimes that other person's opinion, have an impact on me. A lot of the polarizations we see in, whether it be political or religious beliefs or music, styles, talking about worship styles, a lot of the polarization is because I don't want to let that person's experience have an impact on me, because it's going to challenge my self-serving belief systems that are very fragile. So empathy is an absolute necessity, and this is like a rheostat. I have a choice over how much I let that person's experience impact me, and I have a choice. I can shut it completely out, or I can let it impact me a little bit or more. One of the ways we do that, we might find ourselves learning to better empathize, is to ask questions, probe. Try to draw that person out and look for aspects in their experience that we can be interested in, that we can comment on. And again, this is not something that we necessarily want to do if we're going to stick to our defense mechanisms. But again, no care, no trust. So that points a little bit towards shared reality. Shared reality is I'm putting myself in the other person's place, to where their emotions and their behaviors make sense. Now, a lot of people don't want to do this because they think that that's like one step toward condoning or one step toward agreeing. We're going to lose the tug of war if we try to put ourselves in another person's shoes. I don't want to put myself in their shoes. I want to defend my position and argue with them. So putting myself in the other person's shoes doesn't mean that I condone their position or their behavior. But I will get a lot further in terms of building trust if, when I'm talking to them about their behavior, I have first put myself in their place to where their behavior makes sense. Because everybody's behavior makes sense to them.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just need to put myself in that person's place to try to understand, why does that interest you? Why do you enjoy that? Why do you object to that? Why do you feel threatened by that? Those are not arbitrary questions or rhetorical questions that I would ask the person. Those are questions I would ask myself. Why is that person interested? If I put myself in their shoes, can I understand their behavior? So that's necessary. Mm-hmm. The third one, shared boundaries, is I think of boundaries as the pathways that make the relationship work. So shared boundaries could be how we empathize, how we share reality, how we communicate, how we pray. What time do we have dinner in the evening? I talk with families that they don't have any family time, but then they eat whenever it's comfortable, and they don't have a set regimen. So shared boundaries can touch all of those areas. It's how do we set up our relationship such that it makes the relationship work. Mm-hmm. So these three things, empathy, shared reality, shared boundaries, honor rheostat, but these are things that must be done and can be done intentionally in order to show care, in order to be vulnerable. And if you do those things, you are going to build trust.
How to build trust in that marriage relationship or any relationship. I think the principles apply across the board. People like how you approach this subject. They want to find out more about your counseling services. How do they do that, Daniel?
Yeah, the phone number is 425-778-6169. 425-778-6169. Also can contact me through the website, BibleBasedCounselor.com, where you'll also find these podcasts. Virtual counseling now, and that's working for a lot of people.
Yeah, and virtual recording of our programs as well. So,
yes,
so pretty easy. Okay, Daniel, always good stuff. Sound Mind broadcast with life coach and counselor Daniel Pryor on KCIS.
You've been listening to Sound Mind with life coach and counselor Daniel Pryor. For more information about Daniel Pryor and his services, visit BibleBasedCounselor.com. Daniel has offices in Kirkland and Edmonds. To make an appointment, call 425-778-6169. Be sure to tune in each Tuesday afternoon at 1 p.m. for Sound Mind with Daniel Pryor.